Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody deserves it more. Herbert pressured again. Slings and it's caught by Johnston. And now the ball is loose. Washington recovers. Johnston had it and then he fumbled it and the Commanders get a big break as Marshawn Lattimore comes up with it. I believe it was Quan Martin who forced the fumble.
Did that play save the game? It seemed like it. You know, we were headed towards another week of doom and gloom storylines until that hit by Quan Martin. Plays in the second quarter, they rarely decide games, but that one definitely changed the game and probably put us into position to have a nice victory Monday and a pleasant week ahead. Good morning, everybody. Max is here with me. Ben will join us. He is back from LA. He'll join us at 12. Plenty of time for you. My game take coming up. Quan Martin said about the hit on Quentin Johnston after the game that caused the fumble with 8 minutes and 50 seconds left in the first half. Quote, "Violence solves everything." Closed quote. You know, when it comes to the sport he plays, he's not wrong. And that violence solved a looming problem for sure. The Chargers were up 10-0 on their way to making it either 13-0, best case, 17-0, worst case. They were on their way to eating another 2, 3, 4 minutes of the clock, which they had already dominated. Without that turnover, Washington would have been in a heap of trouble. They would have been in a big hole. And don't forget, before that fumble, because everything that came after it is what we really kind of remember about how well they played, both sides of the ball, star performances, several big moments and big plays that for the most part went their way. But before that fumble, it had been a 22-minute beatdown. I mean, major beatdown. The offense in two drives went punt and then punt again. The defense had given up in just a quarter and a half, 179 yards and 10 points, and more of both seemed to be coming. I know that Dan Quinn said after the game about being down 10-0, he said, "I looked up and saw 10-0, and I said, blank, S." And he said, but it felt different. It didn't look different. Wide receivers wide open. They were actually running the football. Offense was struggling. And it really seemed to be a big, big problem at that point. But that play turned things around. And then more plays followed. And it turned out to be a really good win. Games don't end 8 minutes, 7.5 minutes into the second quarter. That one was on the verge of it, but what a turnaround and what a game. 27-10, 3-2 now, a game back of Philly through five games. Long way to go, but man, that was a necessary win. I mentioned so many impressive performances, so many big plays in the game. It was a big bounce back game for the defense. Five sacks, two massive takeaways, including the Johnston fumble forced by Quan Martin, the tipped pass by Johnny Newton that got picked off by Sanristil at the goal line in the fourth quarter. A team that only had one takeaway through four games came up with two crucial takeaways yesterday, and they needed them, no doubt. The Chargers, let's be fair here. The Skins were hurting with Terry McLaurin out, with Noah Brown out, with others banged up, and it's been a rough injury start to 2025. But the Chargers were an absolute train wreck of a mess along their offensive line. But the defense had to take advantage of it, and it did. Big time. The return of Jaden Daniels. The first two drives, a lot of rust. There was a call by Cliff Kingsbury on the second play of the game that I'll address in my game take that didn't make a lot of sense to me, but it was rusty to start, and then he completed that third and 16 after the turnover, and he was himself again. The offense led by Jaden Daniels, and a pretty good day from the running back. We'll get to him. Five scores on their final six drives of the game. Jaden was back. Kroski Merritt, wow, was Bill good. He's the one. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And yesterday's game kind of proved it, given the snap count, given the carry count. He's going to be the guy that gets the most opportunities, and I think he should. You know, he had 111 yards on 14 carries. That is 7.9 yards per carry. Two touchdowns, another two catches for 39 yards. Yeah, he had the fumble, and it was a big one that ultimately did not cost them. But his vision, his cutting ability, his burst, his yards after contact. I mean, the way people bounce off of him, the way he drags would-be tacklers. He was outstanding. And then the number of defensive performances in this game, pass rush-wise in particular, and really specific to the pass rush. I mean, I don't know where to start with how many players it seemed in my notes. I wrote down pressure leads to sack or just sack. But Dorrance Armstrong and Johnny Newton and Jordan McGee and Kinlaw, and I mentioned Armstrong. I should mention him three times. Payne had big plays. It was just one after another, and Washington gets a huge win in the game. Now, I thought this was one of those games in which there were so many moments, so many key plays that as you're watching the game, you know, this isn't a red zone watch. This is, you know, start to finish, you're on one game, so you really kind of get the feel of how the game is going. And usually over the course of 60 minutes in a game that, you know, is close, you'll have four or five plays and you're like, that one was huge, that one. In a game that ends 27-10, you don't expect that many, but there were so many of those moments where you are watching and you say, wow, that was a major turning point play. There were seven of them that I counted, and you could probably add another three or four. But here were the seven. All right, number one, it starts with an absolutely horrible offsides on a short field goal attempt by Mikey Sanristil. That cost them 4 points. That's one of those, you know, early in the game, you're like, oh my God, that's going to come back and haunt them. It's going to come back and haunt them. By the way, on a super short field goal, and that attempt was, what, 20-something yards? What was that, the length of that first field goal but the first touchdown when he kicked the field goal offsides. It was a 29-yard field goal. All right, 29-yard field goal. You can't jump offsides on that. All right, you're not going to block those kicks more often than not because they get up in the air much faster. They don't have to drive those kicks. So the balls get up much quicker. They're so much harder to block. That was costly. So that was number one of seven key plays, key moments. Number two was the play we came in with, the monster forced fumble by Quan Martin that legitimately turns around a game that is headed towards 13-0, 17-0, you know, 200-and-something yards of offense to 25, you know, 11 first downs to zero, you know, time of possession, something like, you know, 21 minutes to 6 or 22 minutes to 5. And by the way, leaving Washington with very little time to even answer, although we saw they didn't need a lot of time at the end of the first half. Not with 5 back, that's for sure. That play was so big. Offense had punted twice. Defense had given up 179 yards. And it was getting ugly, and it was getting ugly early, and that play turned around the game. That was definitely one of those where you say, oh, man, make a note of that. That may have just turned the game around. I saw people saying, that game saved the season. It didn't save the season in week 5. But I'll tell you what, it certainly gave them an opportunity to make sure that people weren't talking about the season being over after yesterday's game. Key play, key moment number three. Shortly after that fumble, they go backwards on offense, and here they are about to punt again on a third straight offensive drive, and they are facing third down and 16. And that fumble, that forced fumble by Quan Martin, would not have meant much. You know, if they go 3 and out and give the ball back to the Chargers and the Chargers have good field position. But, wow, the first big play of Jaden's return. 3rd and 16, they're not checking it down. They're not running a screen or a draw. He's throwing to the sticks to the rookie Jalen Lane. It is a great throw. It's a really good contested catch. And there it is, a massive conversion. And from that moment on, Jaden and the offense completely different the rest of the way. Number four, key moment number four. End of the first half, 10-7, punting from their own end zone. I'll talk about, when I get to my game take, the different possibilities they had there at the end of the first half. Quinn was ultra aggressive, not once, but twice in that scenario. And he hadn't been, you know, without Jaden, with Mariota. But down 10-7, punting from deep in your own end zone. That punt gets returned 57 yards for a touchdown by Ladd McConkie. Now, I'm sure most of you, like I, saw the roughing or running into, wasn't sure what it would be. Go back to the Maryland game on Saturday when their punter got absolutely mauled and for some reason it was running into the kicker. You don't know these days with if it's going to be a 15 or a 5. It seems like more often than not, when it looks like it's a 15, it's a 5. And when it looks like a 5, it's a 15. That one looked like a 15. It was a 15. It nullified the 17-7 lead on the punt return, and it gave Washington the ball from their own 17-yard line. But what would they do with it? That leads to key moment, key play number five. First play after the roughing the punter. We're not going to run the clock out from our own 17, one timeout left. We get the ball to start the second half, but no, we're going for it. Jaden, 50-yard bomb to Luke McCaffrey. What a throw. What a catch. That leads to a game-tying field goal and all of the momentum heading into halftime. I mean, that game turned on a dime at the 8:50 mark, and it was about to turn again until that bomb to McCaffrey. Play number six of my top seven moments in which you jotted it down and said, that one, that's the play that we're going to look back on. First play of the fourth quarter. This is the one where the Chargers, potentially, if they had come back to win the game, would have pointed to this play to say, without that, we don't win the game. And that was Kroski Merritt's fumble on 1st and 10 in Charger territory after they had failed on a 4th and 2. And here goes the ball on the turf, recovered by the Chargers. And all of a sudden, a game that looks like we're on the verge of putting away is now back in play with 14-something left in the fourth quarter. And then at the end of that drive, finally, by the way, a drive. Did you guys see this? That drive for the Chargers after Bill's fumble, all right, which started on their own 43-yard line, all right, their own 43-yard line with 14:52 left in a game that was a 10-point game, 20-10. In just 53 yards, they ran 14 plays and ate 7 minutes and 12 seconds of the clock. By the way, yesterday's game is not going to help Washington's time of possession disparity. It was 34-19 Chargers to 25-41 Washington, 25 minutes, 41 seconds for Washington. They were 28th in the league coming in time of possession, something that they really owned last year, finishing 7th in the league. But man, when you go 14 plays in 7 minutes and 12 seconds, you usually think that that's like an 85-yard drive. 53 yards. And they had a first and goal at the 1. No Hampton on that drive for them. That was big for Washington. And the interception by Sanra Still after the Johnny Newton tipped pass. Herbert looking for Keenan Allen in the end zone on 3rd and goal. That was the 7th big moment. And the final big moment of the game. Rarely do you have that many plays in a game that ends 27-10 where you look back and say, mark that one down, jot that one down. That one is going to be one we talk about. And there were at least 7 of them. How about the drive, by the way, that followed the Sanra Still pick? 13 plays, 99 yards, 6 minutes and 32 seconds. And on 4th and 7, instead of kicking the field goal, they go for it, and Jaden throws a touchdown pass to Debo in the corner of the end zone, officially in that moment ending the football game. I guess they technically needed the extra point to make it for sure a 3-possession game. But wow, that was a game that had a lot of those moments. It was a win that they really needed. The season is long, all right? You know, if they had lost yesterday, the season was not done. It would have felt like it was on the verge of slipping away. But what a difference, 3-2, coming from 10-0 down and on the verge of it being worse than 10-0, to dominate a team on the road. I know it was not much of a road environment. How great that feels through 5 versus what it would have been. 2-3, 2-game losing skid, doom and gloom all week. It's amazing. A week ago, talking about how bad the defense was against the Falcons, and then it steps up with probably its performance of the year, considering the circumstances. Again, against a team that was hurting up front and has been absolutely shredded to pieces up front for 3 straight games. But wasn't sure that we had it to take advantage of it, and we did. This team had the guys up front in particular to take advantage of that situation. It wasn't must win. You know, I never thought yesterday was must win. I thought it was a need to have, and I thought they would get it all week. I did. And no, for all of you tweeting me, I do not have a feel on the Bears game like I did on the Falcons game 2 weeks ago and on the Chargers game a week ago. I think this is going to be a really interesting football game a week from tonight at home against the Bears. Not a strong feeling yet either way. We will see as the week goes along. But look, this was one of those games that there are certain, you know, junctures of the season when you have a successful season that you sometimes look back and say, you know what, that was one we were on the verge of it going sideways, and we were, you know, we got plays, we made plays, we came back, we won the game, and we stopped the potential bleeding at that moment in the season. You really do, when you are a successful team and you believe yourself to be a contending team, you've got to stop potential, you know, runs. They had that 3-game losing skid last year. They had to bounce back after it, and they did. And I thought yesterday they kept the doom and gloom feeling of the season slipping away. They kept it at a distance. They did that yesterday. I'll get to my game take coming up here in a moment. I do want to just mention this about Jaden Daniels' return. I know that he's played two games, or he had played two games before yesterday, but man, yesterday, from that 3rd-and-16 completion on in the second quarter after the fumble recovery, that really felt like the beginning of Jaden Daniels' second season. The first two count. I'm not trying to take away the first two. They will count on his record, statistically, win-loss-wise, etc. But remember, yesterday was his first game in 23 days, in over 3 weeks. And the start of the season was the opener, which is always a weird game, and then 4 nights later. And I think that yesterday was huge. I don't think he ever had a doubt that he was going to play well. And it didn't start well at all. But what a turnaround. And he is, of course, the absolute key to another winning season, another season in which this team contends for something in the postseason. And I thought he looked good. I thought he looked healthy, especially after he ditched those shoes early on for a better pair. He looked good throwing it. He looked good running it. He moved well. And you can just see how everybody else benefits by his mere presence on the field. The way teams have to play him and account for him makes it so much easier for everybody else, even though they were missing so many key players. His health and availability isn't the only thing that matters, but it's the thing that matters the most. Good to have him back. Good win for this team. 3-2, everything on the table 5 weeks into the season. I'll get to the particulars of my game take next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so yesterday we did the call segment on Bill. Many of you wanted to get in and you didn't. So if you want to jump in, we'll open up phone lines again, 301-230-0980. We're not going to do it for a long time like we did yesterday. But if you didn't have a chance to weigh in, or you've rethought it and you want to fire in with another guy, 301-230-0980. So I went through all of the social media responses. I went through all of the emails. There were lots of them. So this is rough back of the envelope audit. Okay. This is not, you know, this is not Ernst & Young doing it. So I, you know, it would have taken too long. But what I did was I took the, once I got to 40 mentions on a back, I stopped, and there were two backs that came in as comps for Kroski Merritt that had 40 or more mentions. They were easily the ones that just kept popping up, and as I was doing my chart, you know, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Alvin Kamara, who I don't see it, man. It's fine. Many of you do. And the other one was Le'Veon Bell. Those were the two that came up more than any other of all the responses. I don't see it personally with either one of them. Le'Veon Bell's style was truly unique and his own. Like G from the shop said yesterday, there's no comp for Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders doesn't comp for anybody. He had a style that was totally his own. I actually think Le'Veon Bell's the same. Again, I mean, you go and watch highlights of Roethlisberger handing him the ball out of the shotgun, and he stands there sometimes for a full second before he moves his feet. Those were the two that had at least 40 mentions, and then I stopped counting. The others that had at least 30 mentions, there were two. So I don't think this guy got mentioned at all on the calls yesterday, but I think you and I discussed him after you, Max, thought that Dalvin Cook was a good comp. James Cook came up so many times. So many times. I actually view James Cook as more of a slasher than...
So when I was looking at the stats, because I started with James Cook and that's how I got to Dalvin, but James Cook, you're right. He's a slasher. He's a really downhill guy. Like he runs straight and he runs fast as hell. And that's kind of like James Cook, big MO. He will run through somebody's face if you make him, but that's not like his big thing. Dalvin Cook, he hits that little quick, the jump cut that Bill likes to do, getting outside, making a man miss, and then powering forward and building that speed. That's kind of where I see the Dalvin Cook in it all.
Yeah, I get that with Dalvin, and I agreed with you. I think that was a good comp. In the same way, and I'll get to this other guy that I said I thought, and I think one of our callers called it in, or maybe I mentioned it. I forget, but I think Aaron Jones, in the same way Dalvin Cook is a good comp, I think Aaron Jones is a good comp. But the category of at least 30 mentions, James Cook and Clinton Portis. We had a lot of our own players. Clinton Portis was the one that showed up the most by far. We talked about an old back in the 70s, Mike Thomas, and there is actually a lot of similarities in the way they ran. And, you know, we had some of those. We had some Larry Browns. We had some Alf Morrises. But Clinton, by far and away, was the runaway of our own backs. Joe Washington was mentioned many times, but did not qualify for what I'm giving you right now. The over 30 mentions, James Cook, Clinton Portis. And then we had, like, the over 20 mentions, at least 20. Arian Foster kept coming up. I was like, really? Dude was tall, upright, totally built for, you know, the Shanahan zone run scheme, you know, the Kubiak. You know, Kyle was the OC in Houston at the time. Now, I do see some upright style a little bit, but not as tall. Like Arian Foster, how tall was Arian Foster? 6'2" at least, right? Maybe taller. You looking that up, too? Arian Foster.
Sorry, I'm listening to comps.
Arian Foster was... Where's his height? 6'2". Yeah, 6'2". 6'2", 230. So that's not Bill. I mean, I don't think it is. I think it's a hard comp. Arian Foster, Aaron Jones, and Thurman Thomas were, I counted at least 20 mentions, but not more than 30. And then basically the rest of the backs I'm going to give you had at least 10 mentions. Curtis Martin, who did not come up. Curtis Martin is still the sixth all-time leading rusher and a Hall of Famer in NFL history. 5'11", 210. I see some Curtis Martin in Bill. Curtis Martin was a little bit, I think, built lower to the ground than Bill, but in terms of the vision and sort of the ability to kind of get, you know, what NFL people call skinny in the hole, you know, well, Curtis Martin was that kind of a back. Jamal Charles kept popping up. Didn't even consider Jamal Charles. Devon Achane. Achane's a speedster. I mean, A-Chain, what did he run? He ran 4.3, right? Every bit of it.
That sounds right, because A-Chain's been
A-Chain's
fast
one
as
of the fastest backs in the league. Yeah, 4.32. I mean, that's world class. Chris Johnson-esque almost speed. I mean, Chris Johnson was 4.24. Curtis Martin, Jamal Charles, Devon A-Chain, Edgerrin James kept popping up. I don't see him as Edge. Edgerrin James was such a big, physical, badass back. I don't see that with Bill. I don't. I think my favorite comp was Aaron Jones, or if we want to go back to one of our backs, Terry Allen. And that didn't come up as much as Joe Washington did. Joe Washington was the second most mentioned, again, based on my back of the envelope audit, of the Washington backs after Clinton Portis. But I don't see Edgerrin James as the comp. Edgerrin James was a bruiser at times. Don't you think of Edgerrin James that way?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely strikes because it's the run through an MF or face type ball.
Yeah,
that's his kind of MO. Bill's more, I'm going to make you miss and then get an extra 5 yards before I'm tackled.
I like Aaron Jones. I think that's the one that for me is the best. Aaron Jones is a feel, vision, get skinny. You don't think he's getting through that, and then all of a sudden he's through it. And then, by the way, he can definitely outrun you if he needs to, not with world-class Chris Johnson, Devon A-Chain speed, but 4.45 speed, more than functional. He'll drag players that you're surprised he drags for, you know, extra yards. I think for me, I know for you, Dalvin Cook, I think for me, it's Aaron Jones. Terry Allen's not a bad one. Terry Allen was a rugged runner, too. I don't know if Bill's rugged yet. I don't know if that's going to be part of his whole thing. We're doing this after five games. By the way, I'll give you another one. And this was a guy that I actually wanted them to consider signing. I think there's a similar running style to J.K. Dobbins. I think J.K. Dobbins is that incredible feel between the tackles, vision, runner. Can bust to the outside and can run. He's having a very good season so far. He's rushed for 400 plus yards and four touchdowns for the Denver Broncos. He is their lead back. Their lead back in Denver. They play the London game Sunday morning. Didn't see a lot of Dobbins in responses. What's Dobbins' size? Is he 6 feet? Is he 5'11"?
No, he strikes me as a little smaller.
Dobbins, 5'10", 212. Yep, you're right.
That's accurate.
But I think there's a similarity to Dobbins.
No, I am watching the cuts right now, and yeah, I definitely see. I'm watching a lot of 2024 Chargers highlights, and I see it. I see exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, Dobbins, let's face it, had he remained healthy coming out of Ohio State with the Ravens, I mean, he would have been a star back there. He just missed way too many games.
It's been his biggest
rookie
thing.
Year, he was excellent with Lamar, right?
Yeah, dude, I thought that was going to be a deadly 1-2 for a really long time.
What round was he drafted in?
I believe second.
Second round, 2020 draft, number 55 overall.
Yep.
So towards the end of the second round. All right. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of opinions, and we're five games into it. Of course, our guy Ian basically, you know, tried to basically throw a lot of cold water on it. It's like he's, you know, five games, he's just a guy. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. The top two answers, though, I don't see Le'Veon Bell at all. I don't see it in style. I don't see it in size. I don't see it in patience. He's got patience, don't get me wrong, but nobody's ever had the patience behind the line of scrimmage that Le'Veon Bell had. What a big mistake he made, too, that holdout year. I mean, what a devastating mistake he made for his career. And I don't see Kamara, I guess running style a little bit, but Kamara gets lower. And he's shiftier. And again, like I said, and this isn't a stylistic thing from a running standpoint, Alvin Kamara's caught 80 passes in a season four times. Like, maybe Bill ends up becoming that. Tony in Upper Marlboro. Tony, go ahead.
Kevin, the one guy nobody mentioned, I'm going to mention right now, I'm watching his highlight reel, is Priest Holmes.
He's that a was master. Mentioned a lot of times. Actually, it almost qualified for the last rung that I had, like 10 mentions. There were at least five or six people that mentioned Priest Holmes. I saw that pop up. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of him. Tell me why you thought of him.
He has a shifty running style where he can change directions on a dime, but he's faster. He's a faster version, in my opinion. He's a daylight runner. He doesn't take a lot of hits. Toward the end of his career, Priest Holmes became kind of reckless and sustained a lot of injuries. But I think our guy is more of a daylight runner, but he has that shifty running style. It's very similar to Priest Holmes, in my opinion, but he's faster than Priest Holmes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. I appreciate that. This from my buddy Joe. Joe writes, "You're acting like his style is totally unique. The truth is there are 30-plus comps, at least for him." And then he starts to list a lot of the guys that I've mentioned. That's fair. I'm not suggesting that Kroski Merritt has, like, this totally unique running style. I'm not. I just didn't, like, in my own mind, come up with, like, the obvious comp. He's very similar to a lot of backs that have excellent between the tackles vision, but the ability to take it outside and with speed and burst, you know, be a big play threat. I mean, I think we're going to see a 65-yard touchdown run at some point. Let's go to DC. DC, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Great day, Kevin. How are you?
What's up, DC? How are you, man?
Man, I'm excellent, brother. That was actually a great comparison you came up with, the J.K. Dobbins. But really what I want to bring everybody's eyes to is he's definitely a commander tag guy. He started at Alabama State. He went to New Mexico, and then he had to sit out at Arizona, and he chose to still practice with his team. So he'll get it off the mud back that he wants to earn every yard. And we got to remember he has great contact balance as well. He has power, but his balance is what really
his balance is very good.
Stand up.
Yes, agreed.
Indeed, with the speed to break out of there once he takes the contact. So, man, this dude, we got a nice future with him, man. We just got to keep him healthy, and that's why I didn't want to use the J.K. Dobbins because of the health thing. But yeah, that's probably the biggest best comp that I have as well.
Yeah, thanks. By the way, you know,
all right, brother.
He's going to start to get more attention from defenses, and that can start to really reveal what we think we're seeing right now versus maybe something different. But we're really just talking about running style now, not, you know, where this will end up. Aubrey, go ahead. Aubrey, there? No Aubrey. Let's go to Chike.
Yeah,
Chike, do we have Aubrey?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I got you now.
Hey, Kevin, I just wanted to push back a little bit. I listened to y'all yesterday, and I wasn't able to get on to listen away, but I wanted to bring up, I think there is some reminiscence to Barry Sanders. I haven't watched football for 50 years, and here's why. I know Sanders was a scat back. He'd run backwards as much as he'd run forward. I get all that. But the thing that's reminiscent to me when I first saw Merritt, Sanders is the first one I thought of, was because is the jump cut. When he gets the ball, the jump cut and the burst through the hole is very reminiscent of Barry. Now, a lot of things are not, but that is very, very reminiscent of Barry Sanders, in my opinion.
You're entitled to that opinion. I tend to agree with our guy G from the shop. I think comping anybody to Barry Sanders is almost impossible. I don't see any of Bill's running style. The jump cut, okay. There have been a lot of jump cut guys. Barry Sanders, like you said, and like we talked about yesterday, Barry Sanders is probably the most elusive running back in NFL history. Like, there were, the reason at times he would go backwards is to avoid anybody having a clean shot at him. He was just completely different stylistically than I think any of the great backs of all time. I personally don't see anything that would remind me of Barry Sanders and Kroski Merritt. The shiftiness, the jump cut, I think we've seen that with a lot of backs. You know, a lot of people put down Tony Dorsett as a comp. Dorsett had that ability with one cut, boom. He also had, for the day, ridiculous speed. Thurman Thomas, great jump cut guy. Fred Taylor. There were a lot of Fred Taylors yesterday. Jump cut. Barry Sanders is Barry Sanders, man. He's one of one. And by the way, he's, for me, not the greatest running back of all time. I think Walter Payton is the greatest running back of my lifetime. And I'll also say that Earl Campbell is incredibly underrated in terms of the greatest.
Am I still on?
What'd you say?
Am I still on? I'm listening. I agree with you about 98% of the time, but on that one, I just don't. Look, I know that's the guy messed up, but to me, the greatest of all time is O.J. Simpson, and there's nobody even close.
Well, people,
I love Walter.
Yeah,
I mean, Simpson was
jump cut,
the quintessential back, in my opinion. I mean, I love Walter Payton, and I love Earl Campbell, and all these other great backs, but man, O.J. Simpson was quintessentially the best, in my opinion.
He was incredible. Although, I got to let you go, but people of a certain age just say, what are you talking about? Jim Brown's not only the greatest running back in history, he's the greatest football player in history. Period. End of discussion. Chike, go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say, Jim Brown, come on.
All right, we were just talking about the greatest running backs in NFL history. That was not a Bill conversation.
Yeah, I'm just saying Jim Brown was the greatest to me.
Oh, yeah, right. I didn't see Jim Brown play. For those that did, they'll laugh when we bring up any player at any position, and they'll just say, no, the conversation starts and ends with Jim Brown. He's the greatest NFL player of all time. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Who's Bill's comp for you?
There is no comp for him. If you listen to some of his favorite running backs that he studied religiously, he said he goes to sleep watching Barry Sanders. I can see sort of that crab-style running in between the tackles that Sanders has. Also, I can see a little bit of vision that Dale Sayers has. Like, he's going to be a top three back in the league at some point if he's given the opportunity to run at volume. But there's no real comp. Like, he has a little bit of Aaron Jones, but he also has a little bit of Dalvin Cook as well. His vision is unique, but other backs had vision as well, but there's something about his mentality as well that tells me that he's going to be one of the top backs in the league. There's no real comp. He's a mixture of all kinds of running back.
Yeah, but we could probably say, let's not act like he's the only one that we'd have this conversation about, because if that's true, there are probably, in the last 15 years, another 75 running backs that came out and showed promise early that we would say, wow, there's really not, you know, nobody jumps out. And that's a good thing, but I'm not suggesting you're doing it, but I don't want to get carried away and act like this guy's style is so unique, there's no comp for him, because that's not true about him. His style's not unique in any way. He is a really good between the tackles, vision, get skinny in the hole, don't take a direct shot, has the burst, has some yards after contact ability I didn't know he had. All right, phone lines are packed again for this subject. We're doing a lot of Bill this week. Why not? I mean, can't wait to see him on Monday night against the Bears, a team that's given up a lot on the ground. So this could be a huge opportunity for the number one rush offense in the NFL to get after the Chicago Bears. Stay on hold if you're there. We'll do another segment of Bill Comp Calls on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Real quickly, before we get to Jim Smith, the new athletic director at Maryland, this from my guy Tom, who writes, at least Kevin, Jaden Daniels isn't going to be the team's leading rusher this year. You asked for that all off season. I did. I said we have to find out and figure out a situation where Jaden Daniels doesn't lead the team in rushing essentially for 10 of the 17 regular season games. Now, if you do the math on just the three games that Jaden's played in and his rushing attempts, he's actually, through three games out of five total, on pace for the same number of rushing attempts last year, but in terms of yards, Bill's well ahead and should be the leading rusher on the team this year based on the start here through the first five games, and that would be great. We don't want Jaden Daniels to be the leading rusher for the football team in 2025. Let's hope that's a one-year thing. Lamar's done it before, but not as much as you would think. They've had backs on that team that have, obviously, last year, Derrick Henry. All right, this segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Window Nation. October's here, and by the way, the return of chilly air is on the way this week. How about temperatures in the 30s and 40s tonight, tomorrow night, and for the rest of the week? If you've got older windows, and older, they get stuck, they're hard to open, hard to close, you're getting drafts into your home, and it's costing you money on your heating bills. You're paying too much. You can replace those old windows with new, top quality, and very efficient windows from Window Nation right now with their best offer of the year. For every two windows you purchase, the next two will be for free, and there's no limit. Plus, they give you the option, Window Nation does, of not paying for these new windows for two full years. No down payment, no monthly payments, and no interest until the year 2027. The price overall includes one-day installation. It's not going to be inconvenient to get these windows, these new windows into your home. They'll be in and out of your home in a day or less. Your home will look better than before they arrived. It's easy to get started. Just call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. They'll come out. They'll give you a free, no risk, no obligation, no pressure estimate. You'll actually find out which windows in your home need to be replaced, and then you can make the decision. So I ask of you, if you're interested in new windows, just give Window Nation a chance to come out and give you a free estimate. WindowNation.com along with 866-90-NATION. So last week on my podcast, I had Jim Smith, the new athletic director from Maryland, on the show. People have been telling me for a while, super impressive. He comes from a pro background, most recently with the Atlanta Falcons. And by the way, the Falcons and trying to get people to those games is a challenge, similar to what Maryland's had, especially in football. I started off by talking about the resume and why Maryland. You have a very interesting, extensive, you know, professional resume that has been spent primarily in pro sports. So why the AD job at Maryland?
So I think it was, I get a call out of the, kind of out of the blue from a search firm that said that there was a Big Ten university looking for an athletic director that looks a little bit different than the traditional athletic directors in the past. And that immediately piqued my interest, but it also made me feel a little skeptical because I think I've heard the same thing many times previously. And so I asked just to see the job description, and it read like a president or CEO of a professional sports team. And it said to me that the University of Maryland really wanted to do something different and wanted to try and, you know, build the athletic program and athletic revenues up and really focus on growth rather than focus on maintaining. And that was really intriguing. And then I got the opportunity to meet President Pines. And we're really fortunate to have a president of a Big Ten university who cares about athletics. And when you combine a great university, by the way, I did not know how great a university University of Maryland is academically.
Right.
But when you combine academics, a president who cares about athletics, and a real solid foundation for a successful athletic program, and put it in the Big Ten, that's the job I wanted. And so this was just the perfect time for me, and I hope it'll be the perfect time for Maryland.
Can any of these jobs be, you know, for the lack of a better description, you use the term traditional anymore, given the revenue, given the salary cap era that we're entering? Isn't this job now really like running a professional sports operation?
Well, it's more like it. I can't say it's completely like it, because we operate, we operate sports that are high revenue and high expense, but we also operate, 17 other sports right. that aren't that way. Right. So when you look at it holistically, it's a modification to the job, but it's not a complete transition.
Maybe you just answered this question before, but I wanted to know what you didn't know about Maryland before you got to Maryland. Is it that it was a great academic institution?
Oh, that was one. But I didn't. What I really didn't realize was how good the coaches are here at the University of Maryland in all 20 of our sports. And with few exceptions, every one of them wants to be here at Maryland. It's not a stepping stone for the coaches that are here today. They want to be at Maryland, and they want to be successful at Maryland. And I'll say we've operated probably a little bit more like an ACC school than a Big Ten school from a resource perspective. And I think that's part of my responsibility, is to get the resources to be more in line with the other Big Ten universities so we can compete, to make it easier for our coaches who have already competed in the Big Ten at a high level, to make it even, I don't want to say easier, but yeah, I guess it'll make it a little easier for them to stay at the top of the Big Ten.
Describe what you just referred to. In operating like we've been an ACC school in the Big Ten, how has that manifested itself?
Well, I think, one, we haven't been a full member of the Big Ten yet, so we'll become a full member in 2 years. And so we've been kind of forced to operate like we were operating before. So both our revenues and expenses are quite a bit less than those of our Big Ten peers. And so part of the job is to raise those revenues so we can invest more in our programs, invest more in our student-athlete experience, and be even more competitive than we already are.
You just said something that I had no idea about. I figured after 3, 4, 5 years, Maryland was a full member getting, a full cut in the Big Ten. Is what you're referring to, the media cut that Maryland and Rutgers haven't been getting, the same cut that all of the other Big Ten schools have been getting?
That's correct. And so the same thing's happening with some of the additional schools that were added. Also, they're not getting a full share either. So I think that's kind of part of the expansion process is that you become full members over a period of time.
For people like me, Jim, who absolutely hated the move to the Big Ten, 11 years ago, and still occasionally yearn for, the ACC days and our ACC rivals, tell me how wrong I've been over this last decade.
Well, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong, but I'll say right now, and when you look at where you take a survey of where college athletics is and look at the conferences that are the strongest and that will always be the strongest going forward, I'd say you want to be in the Big Ten. It's the room where it happens. And I always want to be around the decision makers that are going to set up the future of college athletics. And I really believe the Big Ten is that place. And, look, you hear all sorts of rumors of what may happen in other leagues. There's nobody leaving the Big Ten, and there's everybody. I won't say everybody, but most schools would really want to become a part of the Big Ten right now. And so, in hindsight, who knew it was going to be this way 11 years ago when they made the move? But I think you should be pleased that your university is in the Big Ten right now.
How do you make football more important? Students, area sports fans, Maryland sports fans, how do you make Maryland football consistently year in and year out, beyond the obvious answer, which is win big, but become as popular as the men's basketball program has been over many, many decades?
Well, having an opportunity to talk to guys like you and share the enthusiasm that we have for football here at Maryland, I think we can own Saturdays, right? I think this is a great football market between the Commanders and the Ravens, there are a lot of football fans, and primarily they're focused on Sunday. So how do we convert them to also be really interested in what happens here on Saturday? And part of that's having a compelling product, obviously. Winning is, we all want to win. We want to win every game. But we need to be competitive consistently and entertaining. And I think, you know, that's what you're starting to see with Malik. He's both incredibly competitive, very entertaining. We've got a foundation to build around him. It's an exciting time for Maryland football. And I think people will sense that and feel that more and more over time. And we've got to do this throughout the whole DMV, where we can be the DMV, well, at least D.C. and Maryland's team, right? We are the flagship in Maryland. We can be the market's team, and you know, we have to earn our way there, and we earn our way there by being competitive, by having a great game day experience, by continuing to get our fans, our students out to the game, because our students become our future alumni, and when they have a great experience at the game, they come back. So it's an investment in the short term on the students that are on campus while encouraging all of our alum to come back and jump on the bandwagon, because I think it's going to be pretty special here going forward.
It is a unique situation for, you know, a Power Four school in that it draws fans from two major markets, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, another Power Four that draws from two major markets. Maryland has that advantage more so than any other school, right?
Kevin, it's a huge advantage. I had did a quick research, right? Because for college football, people will travel. You know, they make an experience of coming to a college football game. When you draw the radius around College Park, and it's 100-mile radius, right? And you say, okay, 100 miles, 2 hours. So you're within a 2-hour radius. Do you know how many people are in that 2-hour radius?
Yeah, the 12 million, 14 million, something like that.
It's 14 million people.
Yeah.
So look, we have a big market to be able to get our message out to share the good things that are happening here in College Park. And when I say good things, I mean football, men's and women's basketball, field hockey, lacrosse, soccer. There's something for everyone, and we're very competitive. Volleyball, baseball, softball, all of them, wrestling, gymnastics. There is something for everyone in that 14 million market that they can come here and enjoy a great experience, see a highly competitive team perform, and make it their team. And so that's why I'm so enthused about the opportunity here at Maryland, because the market is huge. The opportunity is even bigger than that.
Yeah, and you know, there are challenges, and I've already heard from some people who have spent time talking to you, and you understand these. Like, in the Big Ten, we're the biggest, well, not with LA now in the Big Ten, but before the Pac-12 schools entered the Big Ten, we were the biggest market team. I mean, Northwestern's in Chicago, understood, but we have major traffic issues that West Lafayette doesn't have, that Bloomington doesn't have. And sometimes those alone are deterrents, right, to people attending games. Do you get that? Do you understand that? And how do you address it?
Already have been hearing from folks from even the first game where we didn't have a huge attendance, right? And so some of it is I always say it's developing a new muscle that people have to you've got to work at it in order to be really good at it. And the experience I had in Atlanta, when I worked at the Falcons, when you're in an inner city and have limited infrastructure to get people in and out of, it creates the same challenges that we have here at College Park. And so we just have to be creative and think through from a solution-based perspective of how we can improve the ingress and egress to our games. Because for me, the fan experience is a driveway-to-driveway experience. It begins when you leave, and it ends when you get back home. And then we play this game in the middle of that. So, you know, it's a really important part of the experience. I've heard it already. I've witnessed it. But I also have partners on campus that are really trying to make it better. And look, every week I think we've gotten better. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Did I hear it last night from a new friend of mine from Annapolis about, hey, is it going to be just as bad as always? And I'm like, no, we're getting better at it. But you got to give us some time, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to fix itself overnight.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, you talked about just the advantage of having two big markets, but with it comes some of those, you know, disadvantages that you have to overcome. One of them, and I've talked to, you know, Gary, well, Turge, who was the first coach in the Big Ten, Kevin, and I'll mention it to Buzz, too. You know, Sunday afternoon games when the Ravens and the Skins are playing are not good times for a men's basketball game. You know, things like that, you know, that I don't think the Big Ten cares about. But having an AD that recognizes those things may, you know, persuade.
So, great point. And the good news is we got a lot of Saturday nights.
I saw that. Yeah.
Only one Sunday in football,
right.
I think, over when we have. So,
yeah.
Like, so the Big Ten gods looked down on us nicely for this year.
But yes, they
did. 100% right. We can't be playing Sunday afternoons in December and January. That, you know, we're just that's self-inflicted. So we'll just continue to message that to the Big Ten to say, hey, look, go play Iowa on Sunday afternoon.
Exactly.
You know, they don't have the same challenge.
They don't. So do you have a favorite sport?
I have 20 favorite sports now.
Seriously, what do you watch more than anything else?
You know, it's funny. I'll watch a lot of NFL. So full disclosure, I watch College Game Day. My daughter works for she's on the Game Day crew for ESPN.
That's awesome.
So I find myself watching all sports. I really do. You know, I grew up playing soccer, and baseball. So, yeah, I've worked in a lot of sports. I love the business of sport. I love making an environment better. But I'll sit down and, you know, I'm one of those guys that probably will watch bowling every once in a while or bull riding or any of those, just because I find it fascinating to watch the competition and to see how it's being produced.
Men's basketball, the passion for it, I'm sure you figured out, is high. It's a rabid fan base for Maryland basketball. The expectations are very high. There's a national championship trophy that sits in the front entrance of Xfinity Center. There's a lot of reasons to think that nothing but national championships should be the goal every year. What do you see? What do you think of when you think of men's basketball at Maryland?
Well, I think in every one of our sports, and I think our coaches genuinely believe this, they start the year fully expecting to win a national championship. Why would you be at Maryland otherwise, especially in basketball? So does that mean we're going to win a national championship every year? No, but the expectation that everybody here has really high expectations, and I get to see it on a regular basis. So I know a lot of people don't get to see that, but I do. I know how competitive these coaches are. When you have 20 seriously type A personalities, you're managing a lot of winners, and so yes, I firmly believe that we wake up every day wanting to win a national championship.
Managing that many coaches, yet, you know, going back to what you said about the difference between pro sports and college sports, yes, that's a big difference. But in terms of, you know, national championship aspirations, of course that's the goal for everybody. Is it reasonable to think that way for football?
If we resource the program correctly, we can compete for a national championship. Do you know how hard it is? And you know this. No, everything has to go perfectly in order to get to a national championship game. Everything. And you need a few breaks along the way. But if you're not resourced accordingly, it's going to be really hard to get there. And that's part of when I talk about resources, that's part of my job. At the end of the day, we want to compete for a national championship in every sport. And in order to do that, we have to have the resources to be able to equip our coaches to be able to do that.
Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
new Maryland athletic director, Jim Smith. And again, just for those of you wondering why we didn't talk about the Washington game on Saturday, I recorded that with him late last week before the Washington game and the meltdown on Saturday in College Park, which honestly, like I said yesterday, it's one of those things. I don't know if it was as much of a meltdown as it was Washington played exceptionally well in the second half. I know Terp fans hate to hear that. Speaking of that, we're going to keep with the Maryland theme here this hour. We don't we don't do this a lot, especially during football season. But Jake Butt, who played tight end at Michigan for many years, has become an excellent college football analyst. He was on the call Saturday in College Park. And he's going to try to explain what happened when Maryland lost a 20-0 lead late in the third quarter and Washington scored 24 unanswered to beat them. You'll hear that conversation next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Who you got in the NFC East? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. This from J-Rob91. He wrote this the other day. Kevin, not sure why you thought Jaden was so good on Sunday. He wasn't, and you've been far too early to crown him. Look out for Caleb on Monday night. And Dak and Jalen are better NFC East QBs. Thanks for that, J-Rob91. No, Jaden was absolutely sensational on Sunday, per almost any evaluation after the first two series. So I'm not sure what you were watching. Look out for Caleb on Monday night. Yeah, I mean, they've had a bye week. You know, Ben Johnson's creative. I think this is going to be a ball game on Monday night. We will preview it and pick it on Monday's show, not today's Friday football show. But, yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to be, you know, a challenge. And I think Caleb's going to get better with Ben Johnson. And the story's too early on Caleb Williams. It's too early on all these guys. I agree with you. I mean, look, I think what I saw last week was not last year with Jaden was not deceiving and was not an aberration and was not one-year wonder-esque. I think that this guy is legit and transcendent, and I think we're going to see that over the long haul of a career. I think the health, I think his body holding up is the number one, you know, sort of concern. As far as Dak and Jalen being better NFC East quarterbacks, I don't think so. I don't agree with that at all. I think Dak's playing at a very high level. Dak's nowhere near the threat Jaden is to defenses. And Jalen, going back to last year, even after the Super Bowl, I said, if I'm a Philadelphia Eagle fan, I would swap in a heartbeat. And I like Jalen Hurts. I think Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback despite the struggles of last night and recently. Who you got in the NFC East? 301-230-0980. I mentioned, basically, I took three sports books, averaged them. Philly's still a slight favorite at minus 118. Washington is second at plus 165. And then the Cowboys are like plus 600, and the Giants are still a massive long shot at somewhere around plus 5,000. All right. But you've got a bunched up 4-2, 3-2, 2-2-1, 2-4. Still a lot of head to heads. You know, Washington and Dallas have to play twice, Washington and Philly have to play twice. Washington still has one more with the Giants. Dallas now has played, you know, two of the three division teams. Philly has played a game against two of the three division teams as well. Long way to go. And I would just also say right now, I don't think the NFC East, I think the NFC East is a competitive division, but it's in a loaded conference right now with what appear to be some real good teams. Detroit, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, the Rams, the 49ers, and, you know, don't discount teams like Seattle, Atlanta, Chicago, Minnesota, the Cowboys and the Giants in our division. You know, I was thinking about this, and we may have mentioned it yesterday when we were talking about when we were doing our power rankings, Max, is that, you know, anybody watching football through, say, the first 4 weeks would have easily identified the Giants, the Panthers, and the Saints as the three worst NFC teams. And they've all now won their most recent games. And they don't look to be terrible. I mean, they might be again after this week. We'll see. I got Washington winning the NFC East. It's real simple. They've got the best quarterback in the division. And he is a massive difference maker in their team. And I think with Philadelphia struggling, it's going to create an opportunity. I think, you know, Washington, it may not end up being the best team in the NFC when all is said and done. And I'm not suggesting they're going to end up being a one seed or even a two seed. I think the Lions look really good. I think the Bucks are good. I still think the Rams are good, even though they lost to the 49ers last Thursday night at home. But I like Washington to win the NFC East. I'm taking the best quarterback in the division. The Cowboys are flawed significantly on defense. The Giants, you're not going to do it with a rookie quarterback. And by the way, with the injuries they've had, and one of them, a major player, they're not getting back this year, in Malik Nabers. I can't discount or dismiss or eliminate the possibility of Philadelphia getting it together. They certainly have the talent to do it, but I'm going to take Jaden Daniels leading this team to somewhere around 10, 11 wins, and that being good enough to win what will be a bunched up NFC East when all is said and done, with some big division games. A big one a week from Sunday in Dallas between Washington and Dallas. Obviously, two biggies between Philly and Washington at the end of the year. You know, some big games coming up. The schedules are interesting. The Giants, if you think they can get back into it, they got the Broncos and the Eagles on the road, and then the 49ers. They still have to play the Packers, Lions, Patriots at this point, which looks daunting, and another game against the Cowboys at the end of the year. But the other NFC East teams are kind of in the same boat because they all have the same schedule with the exception of three games. Max, who do you got winning the NFC East?
I mean, how could I not pick the best quarterback and the defense that seems to be outperforming despite their secondary issues? I'm going to go with Washington, and it's all going to come down to that final four-game stretch. I believe it will be Giants, Philly, Dallas, and then Philly again to close out the year. It's all going to come down to those four games for Washington, but I have great confidence that they will be able to win those as long as they're still healthy and kicking. So yeah, I'm going to pick the hometown team to win the NFC East.
You know, I kind of have I've always had this, and for a long time now, this, you know, weird, you know, kind of vision and dream, really a dream, a hope, that a late season Dallas-Washington game with high stakes. It's just been so long.
Christmas can be fun, Kev.
We had it back in 2012. And for some of us, that's what we grew up with every year. I mean, both games being massive, and many times at the end of the year, massive high stakes division games against the Cowboys. Can you imagine? I mean, I don't want Dallas to do too well, but can you imagine if the game of the year turned out to be the Christmas Day game in Landover between the Cowboys and the Skins. That would be fun. I like Washington to win this division. I think Philadelphia's struggles here are going to put them behind the eight ball. By the way, I think any result with Philadelphia at this point is possible, including missing the postseason altogether. I would not bet that, but I think they're in a heap of trouble right now. And I'll tell you what, their next two games, because of what follows, they got to go after this mini bye week. They got to go to Minnesota next week and win against maybe their former quarterback, Carson Wentz. And then they've got to take care of the Giants at home before they go into their bye week, because they come out of it at Green Bay, Detroit at home, at Dallas. 301-230-0980. Who you got in the NFC East? Max and I both have Washington winning the division. Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, go ahead. Gary, let's go to Gary.
Hi, can you hear me?
I got you, Gary.
Good morning. I'm waffling a bit. I'm leaning towards Washington, but I think it's going to come down between Washington and Dallas. What people don't realize about Dallas is that defense has been so bad, they've been playing the majority of the year down three of their top four corners. They haven't had their top corners playing on the field. I think yesterday or the other day was the first time that they had them relatively healthy. They've had guys out there from the practice squad playing. And so they played all together a little bit on Sunday, and the defense played a little bit better. But they could easily be 5-1 right now. They should have beat Philadelphia the first night. And that game that they had, they only have two losses. So they could easily be 5-1, and they should have beaten Green Bay. So I'm leaning towards Washington right now, but that game next week in a couple weeks, I think is going to determine who's going to win the NFC East. I don't believe in Philadelphia.
Well, it's just the first of their two head-to-head. I'll tell you what, if you're a believer in Dallas, then they need to go to Carolina this Sunday and beat a team that actually is a bit feisty, the Panthers are, and they got to beat Carolina because they're better than Carolina, not by a lot. Talent-wise, I'm talking about. But they got to go hang 30-something on Carolina like they did against the Jets and come out of there with a win. Because that's a trap kind of a game Sunday, no doubt. That feels like a trap game, like the Jet game did last week. I'll concede. I gave out the Jets as a play, and I'm going to give out Carolina as a play when we get to my smell test. But if they go to Carolina and win, and they're taking care of the teams that on paper they should beat, and it's tough to say that with any game, because they got a bunch of should beats on their schedule. They got the Cardinals. They got the Raiders. They got a game, you know, they still have another game. I don't know, even want to say it with the Giants. And then it'll come down to the division games. You know, they have the Chiefs and the Lions.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look,
yeah,
Dallas, in this league up here, as Coach Joe used to say, if you can score 37-plus a game, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games. You almost have to become opportunistic a little bit defensively, which they were last week. Let's see if they can continue it this week at Carolina. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it. Let's go to Johnny in Chicago. Johnny, who you got in the NFC East?
What's up, Kevin? Washington, 11-6. But they have to keep their quarterback healthy. They got to keep our quarterback healthy. With him, we can win any game. We're not out of any game, Kevin. You know that. With this dude, we can win some games. And one more thing, Kevin. Monday night.
Well,
no, we're not going to talk about the Bears until Monday. But this is if Washington could win his game, Kevin, this would be huge, because if they lose, they'll be 1-2. What, 1-2 in the conference, Kevin? 1-3? I mean, we are 1-3 in the conference, right?
Right. Yeah, they're two wins. Game, two Kevin. Of their three wins are against AFC teams, right?
Exactly. The Bears, they stink on defense, Kevin. They stink. If we could run a football, Kevin, we should be able to win this game, Kevin. It's not going to be easy. It's not they're going to win. They have to win this game, Kevin. You don't want to go 1-3 in the conference. Because then you're going to have Atlanta over you and the Bears over you for a tiebreaker. They have to win this game, Kevin. They have to, Kevin. All right, Kevin, I don't know if you got calls.
All right, Johnny, right, I got Kevin. You, Johnny. I do. Thanks for the call. Okay. And, yeah, look, we've been talking about the Bears all week, and we'll talk about them today, too. I'm just saying that our, you know, keys and our prediction will come on Monday's show. I think Monday night's going to be a ball game. It's going to be a ball game. The Bears off the bye week. They got two wins in a row. Ben Johnson's creative. This is our defense, secondary wise, is still, if we're going to say it nicely, a work in progress. You know, but there's a lot of progress that needs to be made coverage wise. This could be a game. You know, there is some weather as a possibility. There's going to be a nor'easter, and there's still some questions as to whether or not we get it in the D.C. area or it stays east. But Sunday night, Monday, could be a lot of wind and a lot of rain. Now, it looks like it would be out of here by Monday night, but just something to keep an eye on over the weekend. Joe in Springfield, who you got in the NFC East?
Morning, Kevin. Shout out to Matt as well.
Yep.
I'm going to say Washington, but Kevin, I'm going to be honest. I have a feeling that the wins at the end of the season, it could either be a 10 or 11 to just to win the division, but only maybe make the playoffs, because with the NFC as stacked as it is right now, 10 wins could, or 9 wins could not even get you in the playoffs. I mean, that's how stacked the NFC is right now.
Yeah, so I mean, division may be the route to get in for sure. I mean, we got a long way to go on this. Long way to go.
I will say this as well, though, Kevin. I mean, going back to what about Philadelphia, you know, they could easily either be 4-2, 3-3, 2-5, or 2-1-5, because if not for losing to Dallas, if CeeDee Lamb doesn't drop that pass, or if Travis Kelce doesn't drop a pass that turns an interception, or if the Rams don't get their field goal blocked, Philly's looking only have one win.
No doubt.
They're lucky.
No doubt.
Right now.
They could conceivably be 0-6 right now. Those four games they won were completely, you know, losable in the same. But they have the ability in these close games to get it done. They didn't get it done against Denver. And last night was not an opportunity to win for the first time. Philadelphia could go a number of ways, but what's still possible is that they could figure it out and be great by the end of the year. They have a lot of talent, and they have a lot of championship pedigree. So I'm not counting them out. You know, Joe, you'll know this, and you'll remember this. I was thinking about this Philadelphia team, comparing it to Washington in 92. Washington in 92, after being that dominant 91 team and the champion, they came back, and everything was just off. Now, it started with a contract holdout.
We got lucky getting into the playoffs that year. We got lucky getting 9-7.
They backdoored their way in. Right. They needed Minnesota to beat the Packers to keep the Packers out of what would have been the first Brett Favre playoff season. But at the end of the year, they were playing better. Like, they beat Dallas. They nearly beat Philadelphia at the Vet. And then they won a playoff game. And they were very close. I mean, a fumbled, you know, handoff exchange between Rippon and B. Mitch away from going to the NFC Championship game. But they never, during the regular season that year, they never looked anything like they looked the year before. Part of it was Rippon held out, remember, for the big contract, and they just had a bad, wacky summer. They had injuries, and a lot of S happened to them. And this Philadelphia team reminds me of that team. They're just not in sync at all. But it's not over for them.
Let me let you go.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Kevin.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, going back to that 92 season, that if we had not fumbled the ball there and gone back to playing Dallas in the NFC Championship game, would we have beaten Dallas? Because we had momentum, for sure, not for that fumble.
I'm telling you, it is, you know, it's one of the – I think that particular team, if you go back to that team just had an incredible championship, you know, overall personality. The struggles during the regular season and then the fight to get into the postseason and the way they played down the stretch, you know, the games they lost, they could have easily won, but they destroyed Minnesota on the road in the wild card round. And then, yeah, they had the 49ers on the ropes. And the 49ers were the one seed, remember. And would they have beaten Dallas? They would have played that game in Texas Stadium. Dallas was the division winner. Washington was a wild card team. I would say not. I think that Cowboy team was ascending, and they would have had major, major sort of revenge after the way they lost that regular season game at RFK late in the season with the Aikman, you know, Emmett fumble in the end zone and Danny Copeland scoring. So, yeah, that would have been interesting, and it would have been their third, you know, championship game against each other, but the first in Dallas, and it was very close to happening. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Stevie Ray in Baltimore. Who do you have in the NFC East?
Before I get to that, I have been wanting to call in and ask you a question, and it has to do with Steve Suter. Where did you find him? What did you go into the phone book under great analysis?
He's good.
Well, how did you find this guy? I want to tell you, I'm sitting there in my car, I'm driving, and I'm thinking, hey, Cooley's back. Yeah. I'm like, hey, because I didn't know who he was. And he's somebody said yesterday, you'd said, he sounds like him, but his analysis is a little bit more in-depth to me than Cooley, just a little bit. I love Cooley. I'm glad he's there. I'm glad he's enjoying his life. Okay, so where did you find this guy?
So real quickly, the baseball coach at Maryland is a guy by the name of Matt Swope. I've known Matt forever. He's a big fan of the station, big fan of the show. And Steve, I've had on the show many times because he calls Maryland games with Johnny Holiday. So, you know, I've had him on to preview a Terps game or to talk about Terps football. And he was always excellent as a guest. I mean, really good. And Matt, the baseball coach at Maryland, said, this guy's so good at analyzing football, you ought to try him out in Cooley's role if Cooley's not going to do it this year. And so we gave it a shot, and he is excellent. There's no doubt. He really is. All right, who do you got?
I got the Commanders, so no doubt.
Yep.
Whoever that idiot was who was talking about Jaden and saying he wasn't all that good on Saturday should listen to what Suter said about him yesterday. What did he say? He said he gave him the best grade.
Yeah.
He's
well, PFF,
ever given
you know, even if you don't
in
believe in PFF,
time,
they had him as the highest graded player in the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you've got the best quarterback, that's what you've got to have in order to be able to do it. And we got it. So, everything else will start falling into place. Okay? That's where I am.
Thanks, Stevie.
Take care, buddy.
Appreciate it. Everybody on hold, stay there. Who you got winning the NFC East? The Eagles are in a bit of a mid-season or approaching mid-season free fall. But Dallas is coming on. And look, the Giants can run the football not just with Scadaboo, but with their quarterback as well. They destroyed Philadelphia. Let's face it. No one had 20-17 at halftime. That was the biggest concern I had, although I did like the Giants. Smell test picks coming up later on in the show. Stay on hold. More.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.